Good morning. It's 8:19. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. I'm Mark Smith. Joining me by phone this morning is U.S. Senator John Bozeman. Good morning, Senator.
Hey, Mark. Thanks so much for having me, as always. Good to be back with you.
Yeah, welcome back. You just returned to work recently after heart surgery. How are you doing?
Well, I did, and I'm doing absolutely wonderful. I had so many prayers and wishful thoughts from people all over Arkansas, and that made the difference. So, Lord has blessed me, and looking forward to a full recovery.
Well, it's certainly good to have you back. We've talked a lot about health care during the time you've been in the Senate in our talks, but now you've had some personal experience as a patient. Did you gain any insight from that perspective?
Well, you know, one of the things that I did gain, Mark, is the fact that I had a very difficult situation. And, had a long surgery and things, and yet I was able to do that at my local hospital. And that's such a blessing, and we have a number of hospitals throughout our state scattered around in small communities. Rogers, Arkansas is not a large community, but we have that ability. And so I was so impressed with the medical personnel. They had National Nurses Week in May. We were able to honor them. But what I realized, and I know this, I'm an optometrist by training, but the importance, this just reaffirmed the importance of our local community hospitals in small towns. That's something that we can't take for granted, something that we need to protect in the future, regardless of where healthcare goes.
Now, of course, let's talk about perception versus reality. You're a U.S. senator, so a lot of people just assume that all your surgery, hospitalization, rehab, everything is all free, right?
No, I'm actually on Obamacare and have a kind of a Blue Cross, Blue Shield policy out of Washington.
Right.
So, no, I'm like everybody else. Like I said, I've got Blue Cross, Blue Shield.
Well, when you faced a situation here that you, of course, weren't expecting, and you were able to get the care you needed at your local hospital, we've talked a lot about the Affordable Care Act, and whether it's good or bad, it is an effort to offer everyone the kind of experience that you had, that peace of mind that if something unexpected happens, you're covered. Should everyone have that opportunity, and if so, how should that be done?
Well, they should, and that's the difficulty in figuring out. The problem is, what we're seeing is, just a whole bunch more people dumped into the system, no more providers, in that regard, no more infrastructure, and the tremendous cost that it's taking. And so as a result of that, what you're going to see, my concern is consolidation. And you're going to lose a lot of community hospitals as a result of that. We see this with, cutting expense in schools. You consolidate. You get rid of the smaller schools. And so, again, I think protecting community hospitals is really important. One of the architects of Obamacare, Zeke Emanuel, said that I think 25%, 20% of our community hospitals would necessarily have to disappear. And so, again, this is just something that we need to watch. We need to be very concerned about it. And, you lose your community hospital, pretty soon you lose your community, because that's the first thing that people look at as far as quality of life issues. But certainly everyone should be able to get the care that they need. I went into the emergency room and just kind of walked in and said, I'm having a pain in my side. And then, it went from there.
Mm. Well, let's move on to this other issue. If anyone deserves the best health care possible, it is, of course, our veterans. Yet we found out recently about a serious problem, or several serious problems, actually, with the Veterans Administration, under which dozens of veterans have actually died waiting for care from VA hospitals, waiting for appointments. Now, earlier this month, I know the Senate passed a bill nearly unanimous to help fix the VA. Tell us about what this bill would do.
Well, what it does is allow veterans that are faced with waiting for periods of time that are too long to allow them to go ahead and get local care, and then the VA would pick up the tab. The idea of veterans waiting for extended periods, with serious disease is certainly something that is intolerable, particularly with this group. So, again, we're working hard to get that straightened out. The other problem was they were actually keeping two lists in some place, making it appear that the wait times were much smaller, you know. And so in regard of getting their bonuses and things like that, it was something that, in fact, we felt so strongly that myself and a number of others asked the Justice Department to look into it and make sure that, wrote a letter to the Justice Department asking them to look into it to make sure that no laws were broken, you know, in regard. But it's something that we're working hard to get fixed. We're doing this in a very bipartisan way. Veterans are something that Democrats and Republicans, again, you know, this isn't doesn't have anything to do with any of that kind of stuff. And so the bill that we had passed overwhelmingly in the Senate, passed overwhelmingly another bill in the House. It'll go to conference now, and we'll clean it up and I think have a really good product so that we can make sure that the veterans are getting the care that they deserve.
And we've known about problems building with the VA for a long time. This didn't happen overnight. As a matter of fact, the problems go back decades even. I need to ask you about this. There was a bill to help veterans, designed to help veterans anyway, that Democrats backed in February, back before the scandal even really hit, that was blocked by Senate Republicans over budget concerns, even though it cost far less than the recent bill that passed. Tell us why this bill was blocked.
No, I voted against it and worked really hard to defeat it. And the reason was what you were doing was opening up the system to a massive new wave of veterans that weren't service-connected. Not all veterans now are eligible to go to the VA hospital. It was designed initially, you know, for people that had been injured in wars and things, service-connected injuries, and then is expanded. Well, this would have expanded it even greater. And yet you weren't giving any more, no more doctors, no more providers, you know, no more basics that you needed to treat patients. And I knew, being on the VA committee for many years, that we weren't able to deal with the veterans that we had now in the system. Why in the world would you expand it when you weren't taking care of what you had? And so that was really my, you know, the reason that I was very much opposed to it, knowing that we had to get things under control before we made a massive expansion of the system, just dumping a bunch more people in there and supposedly making everybody feel good. That would have made things, you know, that much more worse.
Well, explain how this new bill that passed is different from that one.
Well, the new bill says that if you are waiting for a extended period of time, and it has to do, it's not expanding into more veterans coming into the system. It's just saying, you know, you veterans that are in the system, if you have to wait over an extended period of time, then you can go to your local provider and, you know, get seen. So it's a reform of the current system. It's not a great expansion, you know, of bringing a bunch more veterans in now. Now, hopefully we'll be able to do that, but we've got to take care of what we've got right now. One of the real problems we're going to face in the future, not only with veterans, but with the Medicare population, Medicaid population, is just having enough providers. And a lot of the providers now are of the baby boom age. And so we're going to see a lot of, retirees in that regard. When you look at the numbers, I'm real concerned there just aren't enough providers to fill those shoes in the future. So this thing has a lot of different components. And so not only in the VA system, but also in our Medicare, Medicaid system also.
Well, many of the veterans that are in need of health care served in Iraq, where things are going bad again as a Sunni extremist group known as ISIS appears to be advancing toward Baghdad. And the U.S. is faced again with the question of how much to get involved without being pulled into a civil war in that country.
Well, this is such an important question. What I would like, you know, one of the things that we should have learned in Vietnam is that Congress shouldn't be in the business of micromanaging wars. So I'd really like for the President to step forward, the Joint Chiefs of Staffs, get information from the generals, you know, the commanding officers over in the field as to the best steps that we need to follow. And this is something that, the country, you know, hopefully we can come up with a plan that we can all get behind and, see what's the best. It's a difficult situation. I think we should have stayed longer. I think we should have being there, you know, helping train and just encouraging, giving the analysis that they needed, you know, things like that. Not being actively involved on a day-to-day basis, and I think we would have been in better shape. The problem in Syria, which again is just a mess, that's contributed to this, and that's part of the Arab Spring. And so those fighters now have spilled over the border, so it all kind of goes together. But I believe the president's going to come over and brief us and give us a good idea as to what he thinks we need to do, and then we'll see as we move forward.
And, of course, the Army's investigating the circumstances leading up to the capture of Sergeant Bo Bergdahl by Taliban forces in Afghanistan during that conflict, amid concerns about the deal that was made for his release. There's concern about the five Taliban leaders that were let go from Guantanamo Bay in exchange for this prisoner. You know, prisoner exchanges are common practice in war, but this is looked at differently by a lot of people because this is not a traditional war.
No, that's right. And you know, this is a difficult situation. You always hate to see an American, being captured and we don't really understand the circumstances, but, you know, being held. And so as a result of that, this was done. But my concern is that I think it's going to put Americans at risk in the future. If this is the way that you get these really bad guys, and these five guys were really bad guys. These were the guys that were hanging women in the soccer stadium and things like that. I mean, really bad guys. So if this is the way that you get them released by snatching Americans, whether they be soldiers, I'm concerned for civilians in the future. And then you can kind of dicker and get the exchange. That's not a good situation for any of us. The other problem was, I think it's pretty clear that the president should have consulted, not all of Congress, but it's very clear that there's, you know, people on the Intelligence Committee and stuff that needed to be consulted. And these are individuals that the Intelligence Committee really does work very, very, very well together. It's a committee like veterans where there's very little partisanship. You know, they work together hand in hand to try and do what's best for the country. But it's clear, I think that he broke the law in that regard. So there's just a number of troubling things about the whole instance.
Well, of course, another item in the headlines now, U.S. Special Forces have captured a man believed to be the leader of the terrorist attacks in Benghazi. What happens next there? I understand he will face trial in the U.S.?
I think that's the route they're going to go. I'd like for them to, you know, if they want to do that, you know, that's fine. But I'd rather see him go to Guantanamo and go through the military aspect, get a fair trial that way, but go through that process. But if they're going to do this other, they don't have to do that immediately. They can hold him. He's probably a fountain of information. And again, I'm not talking about torturing him and things like that, but just, you know, taking the time to get all the information that they can out of him. And go from there. And then, you know, at some point, him get his day in court.
Okay. Well, here back home, there's another issue that's causing concern for some here in Arkansas. The EPA's proposal to cut carbon emissions from power plants by 30% across the country. Why is this a particular concern for Arkansas?
Well, it's a real concern for Arkansas in the sense that Arkansas is a coal-fired state. And so it's going to be right at, I think, within the top six states or so in regard to increased cost. So we're going to see significant increases in our utility cost, electricity. What does that do to single moms? What does it do to people on fixed incomes? And then again, what does it do to our manufacturing that depends on electricity? So it really is a major thing. I'm concerned that the president just did it. They bypassed Congress. This is something that traditionally, you know, Congress has decided, where we go in this regard. The president has chosen just to go around that. So it's just another instance where the president seems to know what's best. And again, I think it'll go to court and get settled that way. But I'm working very, very hard to see if we can reverse this decision.
Well, some of the questions I've seen about this are, like, the companies that run these power plants have known for years that this was a likely development at some point. Why have they not been taking steps to get ready for it already?
Well, I think they have. have, you know, the new power plants, and you know, you've had other power plants that have retrofitted in things. But these are pretty, everybody agrees, these are pretty draconian steps. Initially, it indicated that, you know, since 2005, there's been a 17% decrease in emissions. So, you know, power plants throughout the country have worked hard to do this. This 30% decrease, they thought they would get credit for that 17%. Now it appears the administration is saying, no, we're going to go forward from 2012. So there really has been a real effort, and we can be proud of that, you know, to cut emissions, which we need to do. But it gets to the point where, you know, the last little bits are so expensive that it really will drive up, you know, cost to consumers. President Obama, you know, made his famous statement that, you know, essentially, you know, you're in order to do this, that your utility bills were going to go up, were skyrocketing, and I'm afraid that's what's going to happen. But again, I'm really concerned about what that does to jobs, which is the name of the game. We're trying to get our manufacturing back to be competitive with the rest of the world. This isn't the way you do it. In fact, the real gem that we've got right now is all of the energy abundance the United States has. But doing these kind of things, not doing the Keystone Pipeline, things like that, is certainly not the route to go.
All right. Good to talk with you again. Glad you're doing well.
Well, thank you so much for having me, as always.
Senator John Bozeman joining us by phone from his office in Washington. You're listening to Morning Edition on KASU.